This is Do We Like Movies? It's a podcast where two guys review individual movies, sequels, and occasional television shows. In this show, we talk about our experiences with them, and we answer the question, do we like this movie? Welcome to Do We Like Movies? I'm your host, Angel.
And I'm your gargoyle host that you only see because you might be going a little bit crazy. Named Doc.
And this week we are here talking about the 1996 Disney animated movie, The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Angel tricked me into watching another musical.
And yeah, I tricked you into doing this. It wasn't our listeners that voted on this. It was
you
me.
Planned this
it was
all.
I who did this.
You stuffed the ballot box full of Hunchback and Notre Dame and cats.
Buddy, I have not seen this movie since the late 90s.
I haven't even thought about this movie since the 90s.
Dude, I used to own this movie, and I know I watched it a ton, like, back in the 90s.
You look like the type of kid that will watch this movie a lot.
This was in the... right in the throes of the Disney Renaissance, which, for those who don't know... Disney Animation Studios essentially was dog shit after Walt Disney died. And it wasn't until 1989 with The Little Mermaid where they basically, like, somehow they figured out the best way to bring it all back. And I will mention that the guy who I think is one of the guys who's principally responsible for that, he's a producer who is known for, you know, he's also a composer and a conductor. His name is Alan Menken. And Alan Menken begins his work with Disney in 1989 with The Little Mermaid. And part of it is the music, right? It is what we were talking about a few weeks ago when we did Cats was... you know, the crappy musical. And I don't mean to insult the play, because again, I've never seen the play. But that thing we saw a few weeks ago was not good. And I dare say that in this one, we are being shown the reverse of that, like an actual really good musical. And I think the reason why Disney had such a renaissance in the 1990s was because of Alan Menken and just his gift for coming up with these really memorable tunes in this. Because despite the fact that I hadn't seen this movie in a long time, I knew most of the songs from this movie when I heard them. I was like, oh my God, this is a thing I have not heard in 20 years, but I remembered this song.
And, like, it's really interesting because that era in the 90s really did bring a lot of animators and storytellers, like, together. And I think, like, it feels like Fox Animation and Disney Animation were going tit for tat. Like, they were putting out banger after banger.
I think it was golden age for animation studios, period, because even Universal, you know, at least in the 80s, when Disney was really, like, down... that's when they had, like, Universal was coming out with the Fievel, the American Tale, and Land Before Time. Just a lot of these really good, well-remembered movies that that were not even Disney, you know. And Disney was putting out, like, really weird, shitty stuff like The Black Cauldron.
It's crazy, right? Because, like, I think your daughter, my goddaughter, brought it up. And where she got surprised that Anastasia wasn't a Disney movie.
Yes.
And she found out that it kind of tripped her up because the animation is very Disney-esque and the storytelling is very Disney princess-esque, and it wasn't.
Well, and also the fact that Fox is, like, now owned by Disney, so that movie is on Disney Plus.
Oh yeah. So the fact that it looks super Disney, like, really throws people for a loop. And this movie is very not Disney in a lot of ways, too. I think this is one of the first few movies I can really think of that talks about openly religion, that religion is such a big part of the plot. Correct me
Yes.
if I'm wrong, and I don't know if there's anything that you can come up with.
I'm gonna guess that this is them being completely drunk off of their own success, thinking they could do whatever they wanted. And the movie that comes before this is Pocahontas, which the music in that movie is fantastic, but
Absolutely.
the historical accuracy of it is absolutely not
And they were
anywhere
like,
near what it
we can
is.
do whatever we want as they rewrite one of the, because originally, isn't The Hunchback of Notre Dame kind of a horror story?
Well, yeah, the original one is a silent horror film, correct?
Yeah, I'm scared.
I think it's a play, you know.
You're a play. No, I'm just kidding.
It's based on a novel, sorry. This is a 1482 novel. Oh wait,
So that
no.
was like,
Am I lying? Never mind.
no, you're
Published
right.
it's published in 1831.
Yeah, but
Barely.
like the story start is like based in
Yes.
1482, I
Of
think.
course.
This movie's supposed to be a horror movie. This is bullshit.
Yeah, it really is. I think you and I took a break to read kind of like a quick synopsis of the book itself. And yes, a lot of the characters who are in this movie are in the book, and Quasimodo is a lot more
They
monstrous in the book.
clean a lot of this movie, of this story. There's a lot less rape
Dude,
and
you know what? If this was a Disney movie that was done in the time that when they were doing like Snow White, I think that this would probably be more of the horror film that you're thinking. Because for those who have not gone back to see it, and I really do, maybe we should see it on this podcast one day, that adaptation of Snow White is
terrifying.
horrifying. Yeah, there's
It the implications?
yes. Also, the fact that it is so old, it is like it's just coming off of the film code that has just been placed. And I just feel like it comes from a time when movies took a lot more chances. And I feel like
Talk
there's
about. I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, it's just like there was a quality to those movies when Walt Disney was around, that you did not find, you know, in the time after he passed away, which is part of why the animation studio suffered for so long.
Well, this movie, for some reason, because I know the same thing happens with a lot of the Grimm Brothers stories where they end up washing out a lot of the stories because they're actually super dark in the end. You can have The Hunchback of Notre Dame, along with good old Christian guilt, because I guess it's supposed to be,
Yeah.
I guess it's supposed to be the separation of, or post-separation, so I don't know if this is still the Catholic Church that's involved. But fun fact for those that don't know, the guy that did Les Miserables is also did Hunchback of Notre Dame.
And I did mention offline that I think since this is the second time we're watching a musical film that references Les Mis, we're gonna have to do that 2012 Les Mis
This
adaptation at some
no,
point.
this hasn't referenced Les Mis.
I
Literally,
did.
this is you.
No, you
This
did.
is
You just did
you.
it.
This is you wanting to watch more musicals.
You're
And
doing this to yourself.
nope, this is bullshit, all right? If we do, the only way I'm doing, and it's going on air right now, the only way I'm doing this is if you do an entire series with me about the 1980s cult classic Best of the Best about the USA Taekwondo team.
Nice. I like how me saying that you need a review, like a really good adaptation of like a famous play, is met with, we'll only do it if we get to do this like really shitty 80s movie.
What? I'm yes, 100%. This is what you're dealing with. And I co-host a movie podcast.
I respect it.
And I, but I openly admit I love shitty movies. And best of the, I need to show you the trailer. That movie's garbage.
Demi Moore is in this. She is Esmeralda in this movie. I think she's the only one. She's the only one of these actors that I think I super recognize.
What about Kevin Kline? Don't you remember him from Wild Wild
Oh,
West?
that's true. That's true. That's right. That's right. That's right. I
Yep.
had seen him, but that's like the only that actually.
Well,
There's two
there's
things I
Jason
remember him from.
Alexander.
Yeah, Jason Alexander. Never mind. I'm lying. This is the 90s. They, of course, they had like people that were in this.
And then they have the guy that voices Dr. Lipschitz from Rugrats.
Oh, never mind then. I this is actually very much a. I know everybody in here. I'm lying. Forget what I said. Good night, everyone.
That's the end of the show. Goodbye.
That
I feel really bad that Tony J is actually a very distinguished actor, and I reduce him to the parents or the child psychologist from Rugrats.
I mean, hey, that's kind of what I knew him from as well. I'd seen him, I see him do, I see, I saw him do a guest spot in Golden Girls once.
Hey, did he have the, there he is. Look at him getting work. Did he have the same voice? Like, his voice
Yes,
is
he did. And
iconic.
he's a he's like a painter that is literally macking on all four of the old ladies in the Golden Girls. And
Damn.
yeah, I don't want to give the plot away of that too much, but they're all basically all in on him. So he is 1000% crushing puss on that show.
Yeah, don't give away the ending to the Golden Girls for the
I need to
80s.
bleep that when we're talking about a Disney movie, and I just used
Russian.
that
Yes, I'm sure that our dozens of like children listeners are going to be influenced by that. Honestly, if you're letting your kid listen to any podcast, like what the hell's a kid doing listening to a podcast?
I guess that's true. All
That's
right.
weird. That's such an old person thing to do.
All right, let's get into this, I guess.
Ooh.
So this movie starts with Clopin or Cloppin? What's his name?
Poppin' sounds funnier to me, but I'm pretty sure it's Clopin.
All right. Well, he is a Roma puppeteer, and he's the one who tells our story of Quasimodo, which, for those of you who have seen this movie before, like me, and are watching this for the first time in a very long time, absolutely, this jogs your memory. This movie had some fire ass music in it.
If you loved fucking like Hellfire or any type of like orchestral like church sounding music, this soundtrack has full of it, and it was
Yeah.
awesome.
He tells a story of a gypsy woman who's going to give birth to a baby and is trying to flee Paris. And
Oh,
her she
remember
and her
Roma.
partner, and they are on their way out. They get captured by the Minister of Justice, Claude Frollo.
I want that to be my title, just Minister of Justice.
he chases after gypsies because he is mega racist,
Roma.
and he, this guy, okay, Claude Frollo is literally, he is like Republican politician, like level Disney villain. And I'm gonna explain that further as we get into this, but he is 100% against he wants to get these brown people out of his city.
He wants to keep Paris great. And the only way he knows how is by killing the Roma people out in the
And he
streets.
weaponizes religion to justify him killing people.
No, I don't know any politician that's done that in the last like 4 years
Yeah, he
or
literally
30
chases
years.
this gypsy woman with a baby all the way
Roma.
to the cathedral, and she dies, I guess, on the steps of the cathedral,
Yeah, I think she
and
got pushed super hard.
got it.
At least they kept that part of the original book, because that's kind of how
Yeah.
the baby's mom dies as well.
Instant death. And
It's
then
because
he.
it's the 1400s. People weren't built to be taking spills on stairs.
I guess that's true. So he carries a baby, which is, what we know this is, but it's covered and obscured by blankets. And he mentions that this child is a monster. And he looks for a freezing well, and he's ready to throw the baby in the well. And it's like a priest that stops him from doing it. And he says he's simply sending this monster back to hell where he belongs.
I'm simply doing my job of murdering children.
But of course, they say that the law of sanctuary will, I guess he's saying that, now because of what he's done, because of the death of the woman. That to, I guess, square things away with God, he now has to raise this child as his own. And
Is that
Frollo decides what he's going to do is literally just throw him in the clock tower and treat him the way that you know what I just thought of when I was watching this movie? You ever see that Simpsons episode where they joke around that Bart
sanctuary?
No, there's a Simpsons episode where it's like one of the Treehouse of Horror episodes where Bart has an evil twin named Hugo,
Yeah,
and
I
they like
remember that.
lock him away in the attic. That
And they
is
find
like that is essentially what he wants to do with Quasimodo. Just stuff him in the attic and feed him fish heads.
and then they find out that Bart is actually the evil twin because they fucked up.
Except in this case, it's Frollo who's actually the most evil person of all. But
So
they do
wait.
this on the background to the. To the backdrop of a really slamming opening song.
So wait, is sanctuary like an actual thing? Like if I go commit a crime right now, say I knock over my local 7-Eleven,
It is
and
in this world.
if I go to my local church and I shout sanctuary, does that mean like the cops can't go in there and get me?
No, I don't think so.
Oh shh.
I think you'd super get arrested.
There's only one way to find out.
Please
And
don't.
well, I mean, is it like, because here's the thing, I want to know if these things are real. It's like parlay from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. If I invoke parlay with do I automatically get to talk to the captain? Like, I wish there was more old-timey laws like this that let me get away with doing my various crimes. Oh man. All right. So 20 years later, Quasimodo has grown into this giant gorilla of an isolated young man.
Yes. But of course, because it's a Disney movie, he is very kind. And, Disney is really good at giving you sympathy for this character. And so he is, living his life. And because he's basically like by himself all the time, he befriends this trio of gargoyles, one of them played by Jason Alexander.
And it's funny because Victor Hugo, they're named Victor Hugo and Laverne, Victor Hugo being the original writer of Hunchback of Notre Dame. And it was funny because I watched this movie with my friend, and he pointed out that the if you notice, the gargoyles are never alive whenever there's someone else in the scene.
Yes, I have.
And I was like, oh, okay. Now my this is just raising a bunch of red flags of terribly untreated mental illness, but that's also because I can't turn off my work brain.
Yeah. And I got something for that after we finish this review too, that's going to give you a definitive answer of the gargoyles.
Oh no. But much like it's funny because in it's like it feels like a Disney trope. Like the outsider that wants to be a part of the world, right? Wants to be a part of society. And in some ways it kind of reminded me about I guess Tangled, I guess, Rapunzel being talking about she always wanted to be a part of the world and has all these books, except that him, Quasimodo, ends up creating these like lavish miniatures of the city square of there down in Paris, and how, you know, and creates a model of the Cathedral of Notre Dame. And it's like, and he creates like little figurines of the town folks. And you know, a lot of his musical numbers are very much about wanting to be a part of, you know, what's out there. That being kind of like his big song here at the beginning of the movie. But Frollo makes sure he stays hidden in the cathedral, checking up on him every day under the guise of having lunch with him, always reminding him that he will never truly be good enough to never be amongst the townspeople, you know. And while talking to the gargoyles, they encourage him to try and make friends, and they encourage him to go out and try to experience the world, to live in it and be a part of it. So much so that they actually convince him to join the Festival of Fools, which is my understanding, it's like an annual festival where people wear masks and go, and they have all kinds of debauchery and fun. I'm assuming it's kind of like Mardi Gras before Mardi Gras became a thing. At least that's the vibe I got. And then you
Sure.
know, so he puts on kind of a cloak and ends up going down, meeting the people, you know, finally interacting with kind of with some of the people down in the city square. And while he's running, and while he's running, and he ends up, I think that's where he ends up in Esmeralda's tent, who we get introduced to. She's a Roma street dancer who enchants the men and becomes a very sexualized focal point of the story, as well as the community here of Paris.
All right, buddy. I get what you're saying, and I will let you finish. But while you brought up the idea of what, the Festival of Fools and what it could be from and what it could be from, it looks like it was a I just went into the wiki real quick, and wiki said that it was celebrated on January 1st, celebrated by the clergy in Europe during the Middle Ages. Initially in southern France, but later more wildly. During the feast, participants would elect either a false bishop, a false archbishop, or a false pope, and they'd basically do a parody of the clergy ref of the clergy like rituals. But the best part about this is, in Wiki, it talks about connections to other holidays. It says, due to all of them taking place in the post-Christmas season, this, the Feast of Circumcision, and the Feast of the Ass
I
all
beg
grew
you.
more entangled over centuries
The face of the what?
as a result of fusing with the Feast of the Ass. When the church forbade activities from taking the festivities from taking place within churches.
We're feasting on what today, sir?
So basically, at some point, they weren't allowed to mimic clergy anymore, so they start to mimic donkeys. Thus, that's the reason why it's called the Feast of the Ass.
Was eating booty.
I'll show you a feast of That's the sequel I need to this.
Hunchback of Notre Dame 2, The Feast of the Ass. Surprisingly, not a porno. Oh, God. Wait. So they were like, okay, we're gonna let you guys roast the clergy. And it got too good. So they're like, that one kind of hurt. So now you guys can't make fun of them.
Isn't that how that always happens?
Some asshole gets their little bitch feelings hurt.
Yeah. Republican politicians get their feelings hurt and then things have to go away.
Yeah, and then they start banning TikTok pieces.
Podcast, but I love it.
Oh God. Yeah, so after he meets Esmeralda, Esmeralda like grabs his face and she's like, "Hey, nice mask." And completely convinced that or knowing that he can trick people with with his hideous face apparently making people think it's a mask. He goes out in the public and Quasimodo finally gets to interact with the people and he gets to have fun and be a part of the festival. However, Frollo's guards end up getting a hold of him and start humiliating him in front of the crowd. Eventually, leading the entire crowd to start throwing, once people realize that that's not a mask and actually how he looks, they end up start like hurling rotten tomatoes and vegetables. And I was just like, I know I should feel really bad, but just the concept of always chucking tomatoes at people cracks me up.
You're a
So,
scumbag.
I know I 100% own that, but I just think about that TikTok where the girl's like, boo, tomato, tomato. So I know I should feel bad that Quasimodo's being like attacked right now, but I couldn't help but giggle at like the thought of throwing tomatoes at people. So Esmeralda comes to his defense, and she ends up standing up to Frollo, and this kind of solidifies one, that he becomes mad horny for Esmeralda, and two, he
Oh,
plans on
yeah.
killing all the Roman people, all the Romance people in Paris. Yeah, he starts be oh, and I think this, yeah, Esmeralda helps. I think she does she help Quasimodo escape? I forgot.
She does. She helps him when he's being tortured by the townspeople. And Frollo is there just watching it happen and allowing it to happen because to him, it's Quasimodo needs to pay for his sins of leaving the bell tower.
How dare you exist, you bastard.
How dare you exist in the real world? How dare we treat you like humans?
You want human treatment in this economy?
Want the right to exist? Ew.
Oh man, so Esmeralda, or he ends up ordering, by he, I mean, Frollo ends up ordering, Esmeralda's arrest. She ends up escape using ends up escaping using a magic trick,
Gypsy
and
magic.
as she gets chased throughout the town, Quasimodo retreats back to the cathedral to kind of recover. And we get also get introduced to Captain Phoebus, who's been throughout this while all the stuff has been going on in the festival, he's been introduced as like recently being called back from the Crusades to be able to protect Paris. So he's already kind of wary of why he's been brought back. But he's been ordered to arrest Esmeralda, and as he confronts her at the cathedral,
Taking
he
a
can
break from committing war crimes to terrorize the
committing
people of Paris.
to committing more war crimes. You just described European history, like you said the
Yeah.
same thing twice.
It's like a war crime Olympics.
They're winning. But he ends up convincing Esmeralda to seek sanctuary in the cathedral, which pretty much puts her under house arrest because the guards can't enter the holy ground to bring violence to the house of God, is my understanding.
It's pretty interesting watching this, and you're like, wow, I really can't believe Disney did something like this. Again, I really think that they just were, they thought they could do whatever they wanted at this point. Because, yeah, it seems slightly more, dare I say, adult than the other stuff they were putting out.
Oh, dude, the entire time I was like, she's gonna get burned at the stake. They're gonna call her a witch, and this is gonna turn into a really dark movie really soon. That's kind of what I was expecting the entire time.
And little did we know that soon after we were going to get maybe the best number in this entire movie, which is when Frollo s sings the Hellfire song.
I'm so horny, so damn horny.
Oh my God. He might be the most evil Disney villain of all time because this man is so incredibly criminally horny that he is going to burn down the entire city of Paris because he doesn't know how to deal with his own feelings.
I don't think anything has created more villains than repressed sexuality and toxic masculinity.
He is literally like a Voltron of like every toxic male villain you've ever seen in your life.
It's like
Again,
Andrew Tate
imagine.
and Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson.
Like, literally imagine being that uncontrollably horny and blaming him.
on. Yeah, surprisingly, I can't imagine being that
Yeah.
uncontrollably horny.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it probably happens a lot in real life now.
But you see, the thing is, everyone has an outlet, right? Like, what would have happened if Frollo had maybe a hobby or two that he can invest all that disgusting sexual energy into? Maybe he wouldn't want to commit genocide.
He's a nice guy. Come on. He was literally telling Esmeralda that if she joins him, or that if she like screws him, then she'll be s spared. But because she won't do it, and she's a whore who will not give him any, then she
You
deserves to burn.
whore for not fucking me. I love that cognitive dissonance. It cracks me up every time. You're a whore for not wanting to touch my wiener. I'm like, yes, that's exactly how that works.
Oh.
Oh God, it should be remember, folks, these people need to be made fun of
Yeah.
and bully.
He literally deserves death for wanting to burn a city down because Esmeralda does not want to touch his wee-wee.
And it really is sad how many people do kind of fall into these thought processes, and all it takes is one person to validate one of their shitty feelings for them to kind of really dig their heels into. When all it takes is, what if you make one friend that points out, hey man, maybe you shouldn't do that. Eat a moon pie, settle down. Let's go to
Right.
the Feast of Ass. Come on.
Come on, brother. This can wait for the Feast of Ass. I like how we're supposed to be talking about Jack of Notre Dame.
We are. We're making the sequel. I got your first 30 pages in
Context,
my head.
buddy. Context.
Yeah. The hunchbackening or the rehunchening. I
All
got, hold
right.
on, I'm working it. It's workshop.
All right. So at this point, our three main characters are Quasimodo, Esmeralda, and Phoebus. And Phoebus refuses to arrest her, in the cathedral, and basically tells Frollo to go fuck himself because she, has claimed sanctuary, and basically he has to give her asylum. And of course, Frollo does not want to do that because, why would he want to follow any laws of decency? When the most important thing for him is to take rights away and asylum away from brown people.
I was honestly surprised he didn't just storm the or storm the cathedral. It took
I'm
him a
honest.
lot. It took him a lot more longer to get to that point than I expected.
I'm honestly surprised he's not like that WWE wrestler JBL, like who literally was chasing Mexican immigrants at the border when he was feuding with Eddie Guerrero.
It is so funny that how much like that shaped me as a child. I remember that vignette so vividly.
That's basically Frollo, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Frodo, JBL, same shit. Quasimodo ends up helping Esmeralda escape by parkouring essentially through Notre Dame. Getting her back to the Roma hideout, or as close as he can to the Roma hideout, and she ends up entrusting him with this pendant that contains the most complicated to like it's the most complicated pendant for you to figure out is later a map.
I did
The
not understand it.
weird. No, and they have to tell you right away, like they have to tell you where it is, and I'm like, this still doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I basically just went with it, but I did not understand how it worked.
Well, she ends up returning to the Court of Miracles. Meanwhile, Frollo continues like to beg for controlling the horniness. Frollo eventually discovers Esmeralda's escape, and he searches. Essentially, he starts mass incarcerating the travelers in the Roma who are kind of going through Paris through their day to day. Eventually, setting fire to houses and buildings in an effort to like smoke her out. Phoebus ends up kind of defying Frollo, and when he's ordered to burn down a house. After Phoebus runs inside to save the family, Frollo orders him to be executed. So he ends up escaping after being attacked by the guards. He ends up taking an arrow and falls into the river, where Esmeralda takes him to the cathedral for to recover and take refuge. And you get this really heartbreaking scene where the gargoyles continue to tell Quasimodo that, well, if he loves Esmeralda and he really does have pure feelings for her, that he should just be honest with her and just tell her. And then Esmeralda ends up bringing the unconscious Phoebus over to him, which he's first weary about. But he helps her take him and tends to his wounds. And while in a moment where she's kind of where she thinks she's by herself, Quasimodo kind of oversees them as she ends up kissing Phoebus before she goes and talks to him about bringing him back once he's better to the Court of Miracles, I believe.
I had lots of sympathy for Quasi as a child. I don't know what it was about me. I was like, oh, poor guy. Poor hideous monster child that no one wants.
Come here, monster man child. I will hug you.
I will love you, sir.
Yeah, because you do feel for him because he really does, he finds this one person that like she's probably the first person to show him any sort of kindness outside of the priest that runs the cathedral. But he also does that, and this is where also, and I'm glad they don't go into it where he maybe in a more recent movie, or if this was made nowadays, you go and you address the whole nice guy thing. But yeah, he doesn't fall into this whole nice guy thing where it's like, well, if only she knew how nice I was, why did you always go to pick the jocks,
Yeah. It's not like the book which you and I were like reading at least the synopsis of on Wiki where it talks about like he's literally so obsessed with her that he like jumps to his doom and curls up with her corpse until both of them are dead.
No.
This guy is at least able to get the hint and is able to just treat them both as friends that he cares about and not insist on inserting himself.
And kind of, it goes back to that like philosophy that I used to have about kind of like talking about the friend zone and how, when I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, I got put in the friend zone, and then, and then later at one point being like, oh, the friend zone doesn't exist, blah blah blah. Point is, like, what I like that he does is he's like, if I care about this person and I really do love them, they are my friend. And if they don't share the same type of feelings, that's perfectly fine and I'm okay with that, but they are still my friend. And
Yes.
I think that is like the easiest, healthiest way you can deliver that message.
Yes. And it seems like he has a genuine sympathy care for even Phoebus as well. And I
Yeah,
think
because
that this ends up being they're almost a throuple.
oh, that's the movie I want to see. The Festival of Ass is about the couple.
The festival of ass will truly begin.
Oh.
You said it never gave me Wikipedia.
Somewhere there is an NSA agent or an FBI agent that's like, I really hate my job listening to these two idiots.
All right, anyway, continue.
Yeah, so he Phoebus ends up getting better, and realizing that even though he's heartbroken, realizing Phoebus and they are in love, he does want to help Phoebus find the court, as well as to help the Roma, because Frollo does plan on attacking them.
And they do show him like burning like homes in Paris of like innocent people as well, like because obviously like he needs to do it, and the Virgin Mary must save him because he's horny.
Oh, so criminally horny.
You
So he ends
ever been so horny that you just committed war crimes?
he just starts on fire ships. I mean, no, I'm not gonna admit that on a podcast if it did happen. No, but so Frollo, knowing that Phoebus and Quasimodo know where the Roma are hiding, he ends up, and knowing that Quasimodo helped Esmeralda escape, he waits till dawn so that he can follow them and then strike at all the Roma as they're in one place. So yeah, once again, once Frollo confronts the Roma, and again Esmeralda rejects any of Frollo's horniness, he threatens to burn her at the stake, which is exactly what I expected to happen at some point in this movie.
He gets progressively more evil every time. Every time he's rejected.
Like, Jesus, now he's gotten to the point where if I can't fuck you, no one can.
Yeah, if I can't fuck you, none of Paris will.
So Quasimodo swoops in and saves her last minute, carrying her to the cathedral, crying for sanctuary from the ledge. Frollo chases him and attempts to go after and take the cathedral by force. However, Phoebus takes the Roma people, as well as the citizens of Paris, and essentially, I'm assuming this is the beginning of the French Revolution. And ends up fighting off Frollo's guards. Quasimodo starts pouring molten lead into the streets to prevent anyone from entering the cathedral. I have no idea where they got the molten lead from, but it looks cool as shit as it falls from the aqueduct from the like the entire visual in the last like third of the movie of just like Paris being in this like hellscape looks so metal, I swear.
Mm
Like they you can tell the people animating this were having hella fun. So after yeah, they're pouring the molten lead. Frollo manages to break into the cathedral and going against Sanctuary, he ends up attacking Quasimodo and Esmeralda in the bell tower. At this point, with murderous intent, he and Quasimodo get into a fight. And as they're both falling from the ledge, are eventually causing both of them from fall over the ledge. Quasimodo manages to save himself, but Frollo ends up falling to his doom, melting in the molten lead that Quasimodo had been using earlier. Phoebus ends up saving Quasimodo, and in like a final kind of acceptance or a final show of his love of his new friends, he accepts that they love and encourage them to leave the cathedral together.
Yes.
However, not all ends badly for our half-formed hero, as he is then embraced by the people of Paris, not all calling him a hero.
All right. So now that we are at the end of this movie, I can now reveal to you that in addition to watching this movie for this podcast, I went ahead and did the extra work of watching the 20, the 2002 direct-to-video sequel that came out to Hunchback of Notre
What?
Dame.
What? Why would you do this?
I was just so freaking curious. Plus, when I finished this on Disney Plus, it showed it as one of the movies I should watch next, and I went ahead and did it. It's like a, I think it's like an 80-minute movie. It's not even very long, but
That's
much in
not
the
bad.
spirit of shitty Disney direct to video Disney movies. It's got worse songs than the original. The animation's a lot crappier. It looks like an afternoon like cartoon show.
That checks out.
Yeah, but Jason Alexander comes back, and we get a new. So in the second film, Quasimodo is still friends with Phoebus and Esmeralda. Only now he's also very good friends with their son. Who is what's his I don't remember the kid's name, Zephyr. And so Zephyr and Quasi are basically like best buds, and they go to a I guess the circus comes to Paris, and there he meets the evil like circus master or one of the like attraction masters in the circus, and his lovely assistant, who is a beautiful blonde woman who he basically treats like fucking dirt the entire time. And in that movie, she actually ends up falling in love with Quasimodo, and she's played by Jennifer Love Hewitt, who's in that as well. Demi Moore comes back to play Esmeralda again. And we also have Haley Joel Osment, who plays Zephyr, the son of Esmeralda and Phoebus. And basically, long story short, the nice part about the second movie is that our hero actually does find love in that film. So there we go. Nice happy ending for Quasimodo, at least in this Disney timeline.
And in the vein of Disney recently making live action versions of everything they made animated back in the day, there is talks of a live action remake of Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I'll believe it when I see it. They're canceling Marvel projects right now, so I don't know if they'll actually get to this.
It was announced back in 2019 with Josh Gad set to produce, possibly play Quasimodo. 2023, Mencken suggested the development of the live action remake was stalled along to the original. Wait, what? Oh, was stalled owing to the original film's content themes, commenting that the Hunchback movie, Hunchback story involves a lot of real issues that are important issues and should be explored to be discussed. There needs to be an agreement about how we deal with those issues. Do we do Hunchback without Hellfire? I don't think so. So it sits in the limbo right now.
It will not be made.
Those are some strong words, sir. We have both on this podcast said that the Snyder Cut didn't exist and would never come out. So I'm not saying we're bad at predicting things.
Oh, can I amend my, while we're here, can I amend my thoughts on the Snyder Cut? It's ass. The Snyder Cut is the feast of ass.
Respect you, sir.
I love how it's just this will do. This is now going to become, I think, something we've referenced. This episode is giving birth to a new to a new phrase on this podcast.
Beast of ass.
Yes.
I love it.
All right, Javi, do you like The Hunchback of Notre Dame?
You know what's funny is I watched it and I was fuming because I'm watching another goddamn musical. Fuck you. But actually, the music's pretty good. The animation of this movie's fantastic. And you know what? Disney took a chance. They took a shot. Like you said, maybe they were drunk with power and cocaine and were just making a movie about religious trauma and someone's just dealing with being bad horny. But this movie deals with such heavy themes for a kids movie. Much like The Iron Giant, which also came out around this time, also dealt with super heavy themes that you weren't expecting for a movie about a giant robot. So surprisingly, I actually did enjoy this movie, and the other thing is I enjoyed the conversation because we did get to do a deep dive of the origin of this movie too, because I think it's important to also acknowledge where a lot of these stories, especially Disney stories, come from, because they are whitewash in a way where it makes it more palatable for families. And I'm not hating on that. Hey, that's how you make money. Go make your money.
No, and and the music is really good. Again, we're talking about the complete invert, the actual really great musical with really big numbers and all dramatic and the choirs and everything, and it's spectacular. So,
In
it
fact,
clearly
this
is good.
I really hope they don't make live action because I feel like this movie would be very difficult to capture the grandiose scale.
Yeah, it just feels like a really good one-off. And
Yeah.
whoever decided to make us watch this, I will say this. I appreciated the fact that I got to go back to watch one of these movies that I have not really watched at all.
And you know what? If I realize I don't hate all musicals. I can add this one to the list.
Yeah, of course. Frollo's I'm horny, so everyone else must die for it song is one of the greatest Disney villain songs I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, Hellfire goes hard in the paint, that's for damn sure.
Yeah.
All right, Angel, how do you feel about Hunchback of Notre Dame?
Clearly, I like it as well. It was nice to go back and watch this again for the first time in a very long time. And I appreciate the listener who requested for us to watch this movie. I did enjoy the characters. I enjoyed having the conversation on this movie.
I learned a lot more about France than I expected to learn going into this podcast episode.
Yeah, no, I love it, and I think it's great that we got to go back and watch this. So definitely recommend for people to watch it. Watch it with your kids. If you'd like, be prepared that it is a little bit on the mature side compared to something like Lion King or Little Mermaid. So
Yeah, instead of the be careful about this movie when you have other choices like, Othello with lions or the movie that tells little girls to conform or else.
Sure, but none of them are talking about literal hellfire and begging to be forgiven by the Virgin Mary for becoming horny.
No. You just mentioned those are just metal lyrics, dog.
All right, so like, thank you guys for joining us for this episode of the show and for recommending movies for us to watch. We want you to continue to interact with us on social media if you can. Please send us messages on Instagram. Continue to send us requests for movies you'd like us to watch. I know our schedule is pretty set for now until May, and then once we've finished with the movies that have been requested by our listeners, we're actually going to go through the entire X-Men franchise. Leading up to X-Men and Deadpool movies, leading up to Deadpool. This is only going to be the main X-Men chronology, and we'll exclude the Wolverine films for now. So it'll just be Deadpool and X-Men. So leading into Deadpool and Wolverine, which is supposed to come out at the very end of July. So very looking forward to new movies at the end of the summer. Looking forward to continue to review the movies that are on the list because, buddy, this week we are talking Hunchback of Notre Dame. We are talking Disney. We have talked The Feast of Ass. And next week we are going to be talking Blood In, Blood Out. You know what? And you know what? Blood In, Blood Out is a Disney movie. Hollywood Studios is a subsidiary of the Disney company. So my question is, why is this movie not on Disney Plus?
Yeah, why is Miklos not a princess, huh? How come I can't go to Disneyland and see him, shoot up other? Never mind. I'm just gonna wait. I'm just gonna wait for next week. And also, yeah, if you're trying to watch the movie, get a drop on it now because that's a fucking long one.
Yeah.
For this is a 3-hour movie. Whoever made us watch it, I know exactly who. I'm coming for you, buddy.
So, yeah, thanks for joining us for this episode. We will talk to you guys next week.
All right, later, y'all.